In a July 1940 profile of Walter Winchell, New Yorker editor St. Clair McGelway called gossip writing a bacterium in the body of journalism.
New York, the famous woman explorer and hunter, Oza Johnson, has started annulment proceedings against her second husband, a lecture agent named Clark Getz. The charges, I am told, will be sensational.
Walter Winchell ruled the world of gossip in the mid-20th century, but we can trace New York City's modern reign over gossip journalism to the late 1970s, when the New York Post introduced its Page Six column. Now New York's star is fading, writes Foster Kamer in the Village Voice, but it was the Post's Page Six that made gossip-mongering the team sport it remains today.
Whereas before it was just information running through one person, now it was a team who had various stringers going out, getting stories, bringing them back to the headquarters, and putting them together in a column that came down like thunder from Mount Olympus every day.
So successful was Page Six that the New York Daily News, the competing tabloid, felt obliged to bring in a series of gossip heavy hitters to try to compete.
Well, Page Six was pretty much unchallenged until George Rush and Joanna Malloy came along 15 years ago. They were a wife and husband duo. Then 7 years ago, Lloyd Grove, a Washington Post reporter, came to the Daily News for what he called a lot of green. And Lloyd Grove was vicious. He was a political reporter who was used to getting scooped and having to scoop other people, and Page Six wasn't used to being scooped. So really, every day was a competition for these two heavyweights.
What was the beginning of the end for the primacy of the New York tabloids?
I would say it was really when Gawker showed up. Nobody saw it coming. Richard Johnson, the editor of Page Six, told the New York Observer at one point, because we have a brand, we're never going to be challenged. Meanwhile, Gawker was online. Gawker never dealt with lawyers, which Page Six and the Daily News has go over their columns every single day. Gawker was essentially going to push the edge until they were told not to by a legal authority. They were operating 24 hours a day. They could print whenever they wanted.
And because they were online, had a vastly larger pool of sources and a vastly larger potential audience.
Exactly. They were reaching people that weren't really necessarily interested in gossip before, and they were also writing about people who had never been written about before, including the gossips.
A much lower threshold of celebrity than the tabloids ever demanded.
I think Gawker was finding compelling characters and compelling narratives in places that people had never found them before. One perfect example is Cy Newhouse, the chairman of Condé Nast, the great magazine publishing corporation. Supposedly banned garlic from the Condé Nast cafeteria. And all of a sudden, Gawker was writing about him as if he was a vampire. Cy Newhouse was used to controlling the news cycle himself. So all of a sudden, these characters that had just never been touched, whether it was Cy Newhouse or some guy who sent his kid up in a balloon, were all of a sudden becoming gossip items.
Now, notwithstanding the broader definition of gossip-worthy, Ground Zero was still Hollywood TV or movie-famous celebrities. And even in that category of subject matter, the tabloids have been pushed aside by online competition like TMZ.
Harvey Levin was a producer on Court TV. He was doing a lot of true crime stories and all of a sudden decided to get in the celebrity market. He tried to do New York for a bit. It didn't work. So then he came to LA and just had cameras flying around like literal gadflies. So now TMZ is breaking actual news stories that are massive headlines. They were the first ones, for example, to confirm Michael Jackson's death. Nobody knew how they got that story. They just had incredible sources and were on the scene immediately. Richard Johnson, even Gawker, can't necessarily compete on that level.
So I must know, what is the sleaziest episode that you participated in or at least witnessed when you were an employee of Gawker?
I've never actually told this story before, but it was when David Carradine died from auto asphyxiation in Thailand.
The star of the TV series Kung Fu and later the Tarantino flick Kill Bill volumes 1 and 2.
There was a picture of Carradine's dead hanging body circulating in Thai newspapers. We found the picture on a website and the order was called down for me to put the picture on the site. I got into a very, very long argument with my editor, and eventually it was agreed that we would only put the link on the site, which I still didn't like, because I believe if there's one group of people that should be at least given some modicum of respect in gossip pages, it should be people who were at least very recently dead. And I was told to screen grab or capture the picture and save it to my computer in case the link was pulled down and we had to put it on the site, which thankfully we never did.
And of course, even using the link generated the opprobrium of the public, who believed naturally that sometimes too much is just too much and probably didn't even click on the link.
Well, it was one of Gawker's 20 highest viewed posts in 2009 to the tune of about 400,000 page views.
That is so appalling. The society has so defined deviancy down, it's hard to know anymore what really constitutes a good juicy scandal. What's it take these days?
What's it take? Tiger Woods. When somebody previously thought to be morally infallible becomes morally fallible, that's a great scoop.
Feet of clay, the gift that keeps on giving.
Every time.
All right. Foster, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Foster Kamer is a staff writer for The Village Voice in New York City.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.